Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, December 3rd, 2019. South Sudan's army spokesman reacts to Sunday's attack on aid workers in the country.
No institution, a government institution, would entertain lawlessness in the form of a humanitarian aid worker being attacked, then some being raped. I also got a report that some were raped.
And a factory catches fire in Khartoum, killing several people.
According to the eyewitnesses, there was a gas truck that came around the tiles factory. They came to offload gas to the nearby place, to the factory, and the gas exploded.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, in South Sudan, is condemning last weekend's attack on aid workers with Relief International by unidentified armed men in Mabang County of the former Upper Nile State. The men were wearing uniforms. South Sudan's military spokesman calls the incident unacceptable. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
Steve O'Malley, UN OCHA's head of office in South Sudan, confirms that several armed attackers, including some in military uniform, broke into Relief International's compound in Buin and assaulted an unknown number of staff members. He says the armed men also robbed some staffers, taking their cash and personal belongings.
As the humanitarian coordinator said, any kind of violence against humanitarian workers is unacceptable, must be stopped. He condemned the attacks and insisted that people be brought to justice.
South Sudan military spokesman Major General Lul Roy Kwong describes the attack as an isolated case, but says such behavior will not be tolerated.
No institution, a government institution, would entertain lawlessness in the form of a humanitarian aid worker being attacked, then some being raped. I also got a report that some were raped.
O'Malley confirms some of the aid workers were sexually assaulted and others were wounded during the attack. He says the victims of the attack were flown to Juba for medical treatment. O'Malley says this kind of attack can be traumatizing. He says aid agencies, especially UN OCHA, is supporting the affected individuals. Relief International shut down its operations in Mabang and relocated its staff to Juba following the attack. O'Malley says this latest incident, coupled with what happened recently in former Central Equatoria State, Moroba County, where three aid workers were killed, raises more concern about safety of aid workers, particularly South Sudanese.
All of these aid workers are South Sudanese. I mean, I think naturally is going to raise a lot of concern for people about their safety, and people will want to feel reassured that these kind of events are properly investigated and that the people who are responsible for them are brought to justice.
O'Malley says local leaders in Mabang have assured aid officials they are investigating the incident. Major General Kwong says the army will work with its field commander in Mabang, other security organizations and local authorities to apprehend the culprits and bring them to book.
We are going to get in touch with our area commander to assist in the identification, and that one is going to be done with the local authorities. As well as local authorities, and that of course will include the police as well as the chiefs in the area, so that at least these unidentified armed attackers are known.
Right.
Where do they come from? What was the motive for attacking an humanitarian organization that is on the ground helping people?
The United Nations High Commission for Refugees in Geneva, Switzerland, released a statement saying the agency is outraged by what happened in Mabang and called it a senseless attack on humanitarians in South Sudan. In July last year, approximately 2,000 angry youth attacked the UNHCR compound in Mabang and 14 other compounds, forcing aid agencies to evacuate more than 300 humanitarian workers from the area. For VOA News, I am Lasuba Memo in Juba.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan says it has redeployed 75 troops to halt a cycle of communal attacks and revenge killings that have killed nearly 80 people in the country. The Nepalese troops based in the town of Rumbek were flown north by helicopter to Mapur, about 60 miles or some 100 kilometers away, to provide a protective presence in the area. Heavy rains have made it impossible to drive to that location. As we have reported this week, local authorities have said 75 people were killed and more than 100 injured in a number of recent communal clashes and revenge attacks between the Gak and Manuer communities. While political violence has subsided for the most part across South Sudan following the signing of the revitalized peace deal last year, UNHCR says intercommunal clashes continue to result in the killing and injuring of civilians, and along with cattle raiding and the looting of property. At least 17 people were killed and 65 others wounded when a gas tanker exploded in the Sudanese capital today. Doctors at Bahari Hospital have issued an emergency alert calling on doctors across the Sudanese capital to report to Bahari Hospital to save lives of the victims of that fire tragedy. Hospital sources say scores of people who were burnt beyond recognition need specialized treatment. Our reporter Michael Atit visited Bahari Hospital this past hour.
The incident happened this morning at around 9 o'clock Sudanese local time. According to the eyewitnesses, there was a gas truck that came around the tiles factory. They came to offload gas to the nearby place, to the factory. And of a sudden, the gas exploded. And then, so according to the medical sources and doctors at the Bahari Teaching Hospital, they are saying they have received 15 deaths, and then two later died in the hospital. So the two who died later are Indians. The death toll is now to 17, according to the doctors.
Are there any survivors in the hospital? And if so, what kind of nature of burns are on them?
According to the doctors, the burn, some of them are light, but some of them are like burned to the critical situation. And due to the congested situation in the hospital, they have referred some of them to five different hospitals in Omdurman and in Khartoum and also in Khartoum North. So the total figure of the casualties that they have received are 65. So they have referred some of them to those hospitals, and they also made an appeal to all doctors and medical practitioners. According to them, they have received a lot of number of doctors and medical personnel who responded positively to come and rescue the situation.
You have been in the hospital there. How is the scene at the hospital? Could you describe what you saw at the hospital?
I managed to go to like two wards where some of the critical conditions are. And I could see in one ward there was seven injury, and in other ward there were like 12 injuries. And all of them are in critical situation, critical condition, where they are unable to see, or they are unable even to talk. So according to the doctors, the death toll might rise due to critical situation. And it is also worth to note here that all the conditions that were brought to the hospital, they are believed to be people who are actually sitting next to the factory. You know, eyewitnesses say actually the people who were within the factory, none of them survived. None of them actually came out. But it is yet to be known what are the numbers of people or the employers who were or the employees who were within the factory up to now.
And are there any statements from the Sudanese authorities on this tragic incident?
Yeah, up to now, there is no up to this moment, there is no any official statement that came out from the authorities. Most probably, they are still, collecting data, collecting findings. so that they're able to come up with an official statement to the public. The factory is a tiles factory, as I mentioned, and it is owned by an Indian located in Bahri.
Do we know how many employees are in this factory? Did you manage to speak to any officials from the factory who were at the hospital?
When I arrived at the hospital, there were some officials or managers actually of the factory were just left before me. They went to the other hospital to see the injuries or to, you know, assess the situation of the people who are referred to other hospitals. But according to doctors in Bahri Hospital, they were told people are actually more than 200, more than 200 people were believed to be within the factory. But up to now, as I said, there is no about this. There might be more or there might be less, unless we are able to talk to some managers or to people who actually own the factory or the survivors of the factory. This is when we can get the correct figure.
And how about the police in Khartoum North? Have they made any statement about this incident?
They have not issued any statement up to now. But in my presence at the hospital, there were officials from the prosecution office who actually visited also the casualties at the hospital. And they were assessing the situation. And I think this is part of the assessment and data collections and findings that I was referring to. So there is still, like, the situation remains as that. They are still collecting data. And I also saw officers from the fire brigade. They also came, you know, to assess the situation and had to issue an official statement based on their findings.
That's reporter Michael Atit speaking about the factory fire with my colleague John Tanza via WhatsApp from Khartoum North this past hour. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A new campaign encourages South Sudanese to look past the stigmas attached to HIV/AIDS. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what responsibility do you take most seriously?
My family, of course. I love looking after them most time. That's the responsibility I would love to take even when I, you know, when I go up a bit or maybe when I grow up.
My education right now is the most responsibility I take seriously because I impart more time in it because I'm targeting my future right now. So if it's future, that is what I should focus on most.
I feel the responsibility that I can value and take as important in life is seeing that my vision for the fashion house I hold has come to pass as I need it.
The family. Family is the responsibility I take mostly serious. In most cases, family comes first. Say there's things, enjoy, pain.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we have a couple of stories for you about HIV/AIDS awareness and funding in South Sudan. With World AIDS Day just a few days ago, health workers in South Sudan have launched a campaign to encourage more South Sudanese to get tested. Medical workers and HIV/AIDS activists say most South Sudanese are still reluctant to test their HIV/AIDS status or go for counseling because of the stigma attached to being HIV positive. They say such attitudes hamper efforts to stop the spread of the pandemic across the country. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from Juba.
Are you married?
Yes. Yeah, I'm married.
Okay, you're married. Yeah. Okay, today, like...
A healthy worker counsels a student at Kampala University College in Juba at a HIV counseling and testing center during the launch of the Condomize campaign on a Saturday, which encourages South Sudanese youth to use condoms to prevent the spread of HIV. Hundreds of students turned up to participate in the campaign and get tested for HIV/AIDS. 30-year-old Kampala University College student Gadwich Malith explains why he decided to get tested.
I need to live safe. I need to stay healthy. And because I have a vision and future to do at least a good thing in this country, I need to stay healthy, whereby I will be in a position to stay in South Sudan, where South Sudan can be a peaceful nation in which I can lead the country into development.
But medical workers and HIV activists across South Sudan say, unfortunately, there are only a few people like Malith who know their HIV status. Chris Issa, a prevention program officer at the South Sudan HIV/AIDS Commission, says many South Sudanese fear even walking by an HIV testing and counseling center.
Because of the perception that if you test for HIV or if you are seen around an HIV testing service or center, it means you actually suspect yourself to already have HIV. And hence, stigma follows you. And one of the biggest barriers to our HIV interventions in this country is stigma and HIV-related stigma and discrimination.
A majority of South Sudanese communities consider sex education or public discussion of sexual relations a taboo. Medical workers say this hampers efforts to create awareness about the pandemic.
We are for condom use. At first, if you are using condom, you have to first see the expiring date.
Dr. Emmanuel Gordon, a program coordinator with the OK Africa Foundation, a local group leading the Condomize campaign, says the foundation is trying to break taboos surrounding discussions on sex-related matters in South Sudan.
The use of condom is attributed to immorality, that when you use condom, you're immoral. People think the use of condom is for away matches, by going outside your marriage to have sex with someone. But people do not believe that the use of condom is also for family planning.
40-year-old Ugatkwath Mayik, another student in Kampala University College who visited the HIV testing and counseling center, says in his village in former Unity State, discussing sex matters publicly is on the same level as prostitution, and therefore people who are involved in sex education are stigmatized.
You know, in the village, if you tell people about condom, especially girl, if you tell girl to that let us use condom, they think you are indulging them, that they are prostitute. It is very rare in the village that people use condom. They are not aware that it is for their protection.
Of South Sudan's estimated 12 million people, nearly 200,000 carry the HIV/AIDS virus, according to ISA. The prevalence is especially high among soldiers and sex workers. ISA says at least 5 in every 100 soldiers and 40 in every 100 sex workers carry the virus.
We are very certain that if all people really get to test and know the HIV status, then there's a possibility that we'll have more and more people who are already with the virus, because all the ingredients and factors for the spread of the virus are evident in our setting.
ISA says campaigns such as Condomize, which creates awareness and is distributing free condoms to the local population, can help break the various taboos in South Sudan surrounding HIV and AIDS. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Udu in Juba.
Activists in South Sudan say little money is spent on creating awareness about HIV/AIDS prevention, but it is key in reducing the spread of the virus. Winnie Serino has more for VOA from Juba.
Dr. Gordon, program coordinator for OK Foundation, who started a campaign in March dubbed Condomize, Don't Compromise, says the aim of the campaign is to reduce the spread of HIV/AIDS in South Sudan.
more money is put on treatment and less money is put on awareness. And when we argue this out, they say, no, when you're doing treatment, you're doing prevention. But we are saying, no, we know literacy rates in South Sudan are extremely low, and people do not know what to do, when to get, maybe where to get HIV-related services, and debates around safe sex have not been there.
Gordon says most of the institutions that focus on awareness programs target only key populations, including sex workers, gays, and where there are suspected high rates of HIV. He says very few people have gone for voluntary counseling or testing to know their HIV status because they worry about what others might think of them.
Let people get to know that I can voluntarily go and know my HIV status. Let's create more awareness to remove the stigma that is surrounding HIV-related services. For example, even going for HIV testing, you find that people fear, and these things have been put separate. So we are saying put more money on prevention, and also do not neglect treatment. But let's not wait until someone gets the virus for us to be able now to treat.
Dr. Kadiang Modi, HIV Program Management Specialist with USAID, says the U.S. President Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR, donates money yearly to South Sudan strictly for treatment of persons living with HIV. Dr. Modi says South Sudan received $20 million for HIV treatment this year. He says South Sudan health professionals' role is to support treatment, including providing technical support in the main health industry.
And also in those places we do, of course, provide counseling and support to the people living with HIV so that they can be able to remain on treatment and to continue on treatment. And as you know, even these days, treatment is part of prevention. And we are so concerned that those who get treated and risk the level of viral suppression is what we are aiming at.
Kadiende Chol, Director General of the Ministry of Health and Chairman of the Country Coordination Mechanism of the Global Fund in South Sudan, says the Global Fund has donated $86 million to fight HIV, tuberculosis and malaria in South Sudan for the years of 2018 through 2020. He says the program on HIV/AIDS has been allocated $30 million to treat people living with the virus, and for the good reason.
Once the person is taking treatment, the person can live a normal life. We can even cut the transmission so that he or she doesn't transmit to other people. You know, let's agree on one thing, that an awareness raising and prevention is an investment, all right? It's not the same as providing treatment and care to the patients. You know, treatment and care is extremely expensive. But let me tell you, without us taking care of those that are already having the disease, it shows that we can't even fight the disease.
Chung says there is an estimated 190,000 people living with HIV in South Sudan, and about 31,000 are receiving treatment. He says if the person doesn't receive treatment for 90 days, they register the person as lost treatment.
We used to have a one-month regimen. Now there is what is called multi-month scripting. Medicines that a patient can take instead of coming every month can actually take a 3 months quantity of drugs, especially when they are stable in taking the medicines. So we are opting for that.
Chung says there is also a six-month regimen available provided the patients come for follow-up care. Both Chung and Modi are calling on South Sudanese to get tested and know their HIV status so that they can quickly receive treatment and counseling. For VOA News, I am Muni Serino in Juba.
December 3rd each year marks the United Nations International Day of Persons with Disabilities, which promotes the rights of people who are disabled to fully take part in society and economic life. To help meet that goal, Ghana passed its Disability Act in 2006. 13 years down the line, reporter Kwame Asante-Ofori speaks to some stakeholders to find out if the law has been effective in leveling the playing field for people with disabilities in Ghana.
Sometimes I used to have childish thoughts. I used to feel all hope was lost. What was I going to do with myself? When those thoughts and challenges came over me, then I would think of drinking poison to kill myself.
Madame Akusia is a hairdresser and business owner in the heart of Accra. She lost the use of her legs at the age of 3 through an accident. She says her journey to become an entrepreneur in the hairdressing business hasn't been an easy road. She began by selling charcoal and plastic bags. Eventually, she earned enough to come to Accra, but often slept on the streets as she hunted for work.
Someone said they wanted to sell their small kiosks. I sought to help, and I used whatever I got to buy the kiosks. That's how I gradually began to grow. When that was done, I started receiving trainees to learn the trade. I have trained so many students who have now graduated from here and are working on their own. They are able to feed themselves.
Madame Akusia's story is unusual for people with disabilities in Accra. The United Nations estimates 82% of people living with disabilities around the world live below the poverty line. That holds true in Ghana as well. Take, for instance, Joe Abane, who is blind. He lives in the streets of Accra, begging from car to car to survive. He has training in crafts and basketry and hopes he can use his skill to make a living.
I studied a vocation course, but I didn't get any work. And now I'm on these streets so I can get my daily bread to take care of myself. Or if they even put me in a school, I could teach them.
In 2008, the United Nations passed the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. 2 years before that, the Ghanaian Parliament passed the Ghana Disability Act of 2006, aimed at solving issues such as job security for people with disabilities. The law hasn't quite lived up to hopes. Dr. Yao Nyedu Ofe, a lecturer at the Department of Special Education at the University of Education, Winneba, says people with disabilities still face job discrimination.
It's a challenge, yeah, for them to compete for jobs. If you have a job placement for one person and there are 10 people applying, I dare stick my neck out that they will pick the one who is so-called normal and leave this one just because of the disability.
Mr. Abraham Asare is the former communications advisor for Ghana's Ministry of Gender and Social Welfare. He thinks the disability laws are working, but many people are ignorant about them and the incentives for employers.
So you have some tax holidays for businesses who decide to employ people who have disability. Now, this is a law, and that's how it's been working. Unless, of course, maybe somebody is ignorant about the law, so that even though you have employed somebody, you have not applied for what is due you, you know, in terms of the tax holidays and incentives that I've talked about.
Mr. Stephen Dompo is the former manager for the Accra Rehabilitation Center. He says Ghanaians need to be educated about the law to make the working environment disability friendly.
What we need to do is to educate people that employ, employers, to educate government agencies and institutions, to educate the Ghanaian people. That is what we need. If we can change attitude of our politicians, the lawmakers, change attitude of the Ghanaian people, then it will give all of us hope.
The goal, Dompo says, is to eventually build a Ghanaian society that is disability friendly. For VOA News, I am Kwame Asante Ofori in Washington, D.C.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Surayago by the group Saudi Soul. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We appreciate you tuning us in. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.